Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Bring it. What about the great Mike Tenenbaum down in South Florida? Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good afternoon, guys, or good morning. How are you?
We are doing okay. Did you have a nice cup of coffee or tea this morning to get your day started?
Yeah, it was early. Today was a get-up day, so we were up for the 6 a.m. production call and ready to roll.
All right, well, let's roll with the conversation here. Firstly, obviously sad news with the passing of Don Shula, 90 years old yesterday. You're down in South Florida. I know you've been there for a bit, worked with the Dolphins, obviously. Did you interact with him? Did you know Coach Shula at all?
I did. It was one of really a prideful honor moment to get to know him, guys, just from a standpoint of he was revered. One of the unique things, I've been with four different teams, is a lot of former players, because of the weather, live down here, and it's the Marinos, the Nat Moores, Kim Bocamper, I could go on and on, Joe Rose. They didn't have just a sort of like coach-player relationship. It really became more of a father-son, and the players were around a lot. Coach Shula was around a lot. And even as he got into the later years of his life and he came around a little bit less, the presence he had was incredible. So it was an honor and privilege to get to know him.
Yeah, Mike T, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was, you know, something we talked about yesterday. We had Mike Westhoff call in, and he had a really close relationship with Coach Shula. It drives me crazy, because, I mean, you just said it. It was more like a father-son relationship than a player-coach. Why is it that there's so many coaches nowadays that neglect that aspect of the coaching, you know, creating those personal relationships with the players?
Yeah, Rick, that's a great question. And, you know, look, you're a former player. Maybe it's a little bit of the times with free agency where, you know, sometimes it's just a shorter span together. And look, we could talk about the six Super Bowls, 347 wins, but I think his true legacy will be the impact he had on so many different men. And I think that's something we've lost in this era. You know, fortunately, I got to see a little bit with Coach Parcells where, you know, he's at the Jets and all these former Giants still come back. And, you know, he was a guy that, although maybe didn't have as many wins as Coach Shula, I did see him impact people. So maybe it does to a certain extent when you talk about guys now like Mike Tomlins or the John Harbaughs that have been in one place for so long. But I think, unfortunately, that's just part of this new era.
Mike T, switching gears a little bit, I want to get to the signing that the Dallas Cowboys made over the weekend with Andy Dalton. A lot of people look at this as a leverage move by Jerry Jones. Can you explain to me how the Andy Dalton signing impacts the Dak Prescott negotiations?
Yeah, you know, Chris, in my opinion, I don't think it does, except for the standpoint, at least they could go function. I think they would have been laughed at if they tried to trot out, you know, Cooper Rush in that first preseason game. So to the extent that they could go win and play games with Andy Dalton, I think is one thing. So they got to get Dak Prescott signed. We've talked about this quite a bit. 40 wins, 26 years old. He's a really good player. Make him the highest paid player in the league. He'll be there for 10 minutes, and then Patrick Mahomes will pass him. And this isn't very hard. I don't know why they're not getting it done. I think the more interesting point of this, though, candidly, is at some point, if he becomes, and Tommy Foxworth joked about this a little bit, if he becomes Cabo Dak, opening day becomes kind of an interesting discussion, because unlike Zeke Elliott, who we just show up as a running back, even though Kellen Moore is still there, you are talking about a new head coach. And at some point, if Andy Dalton's taken every rep, every meeting, does Dak get a little bit behind? So I think that's one interesting thing for us to keep our eye on.
Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, what do you think happens? I mean long term. I don't even mean this year. I imagine he's going to play for the Cowboys this year. But the way they've treated him over the first, you know, couple of years of this deal, and really they should have had it done, I would say, a year ago from right now. Do you think in 5 years, do you think Dak Prescott is, in fact, the quarterback of the Cowboys? Because I'm beginning to have my doubts on it.
Yeah, Dave, that is a totally fair question. And, you know, is this the siege of Kirk Cousins? Is this where he gets tagged, and then he graduates? And, you know, at some point, you know, there's the goodwill erodes and both sides, you know, move on. So I think they botched it a year ago, and his price tag is only going up.
Our resident GM, huge fan here with Rick DiPietro, was the one and only Mike Tenenbaum. I completely butchered that. I apologize. Mike T, speaking of backup quarterbacks, I mean, looking at what the Jets currently have, would you be comfortable going into the season with with Fales as your backup quarterback?
Not necessarily. I had David in Miami with Coach Gase. There's a lot to like about him. Doesn't need a lot of reps. Can function in the offense. Really smart. Definitely could see him as a coach one day. But I think what we saw yesterday between Cooper Rush and Andy Dalton, you know, they're a million miles apart. And the question is, could you go win, you know, a whole bunch of games with David Fales? And, you know, there's nothing to show that he can do that for a long period of time. So if I was the Jets, that's something I want to keep on my radar. And look, we know a lot's going to happen. Most notably, Cam Newton's still out there. And I'm not suggesting the Jets go out and sign Cam Newton tomorrow. But the point is, there are going to be quarterbacks that are out there, be it trades, cuts. And that would be a position I would keep an eye on if I was the Jets.
Mike T, since we're talking about backup quarterbacks, the Eagles made some waves during the draft and taking Jalen Hurts to be their backup quarterback in the second round. And Carson Wentz, you know, amongst other things, talked about that. But he also talked about the reality of dealing with concussions and saying that you only get one brain and you got to protect it. As a general manager, when you hear those kind of comments, what's your thought process in terms of charting a path for the future at the quarterback position?
It's funny you say that, Chris. I brought that exact point up on Get Up earlier this morning, which is Carson Wentz gave us great insight into his mindset. And I wouldn't necessarily overreact if I was a team, but I would note what he said. And I would certainly keep that on my radar, because the next concussion could really start changing the narrative about Wentz. So I may give that one comment a free pass, but after that, guys, I would monitor that situation very, very carefully.
All right, speaking of kind of a one comment, one off, and Mike Tenenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. OBJ gave us his, you know, State of the Union, that he's going to have his best year ever, and, you know, he's in great shape, and the whole spiel that guys give. As a former GM, or when you were a GM, do you like to hear this, or do you just kind of think to yourself, just go out there on the field, and when we get to September, dominate, but I don't need to hear these things in May?
Yeah, and let's face it, let's look at it objectively, guys. After the 2016 season, he's been average. He has been a good NFL receiver, not a great by any metrics. Now, with that said, the Cleveland Browns need to establish their head coach. Remarkably, if you're Baker Mayfield, this is your fourth head coach. Freddie Kitchens, Hugh Jackson, Greg Williams. Like, you need Kevin Stefanski to be the voice in your ear. You know, you think about guys like Brady and Brees and, you know, all those years that they have just heard from the same, you know, head coach, Roethlisberger, Tomlin, and that's what they really need in Cleveland. They need stability. They need to go under the radar. And to me, the irony is, listening to that comment, guys, I think he's going to play better only because they have two tackles that can really go function. Jack Conklin, who they got from Tennessee as a free agent, and Jedrick Wills, their first-round pick.
Hey, Mike T, is there something this may sound like a crazy question, but for a young quarterback, especially, I mean, Baker Mayfield, you just mentioned the fourth head coach. Is there something to be said about maybe having too many mouths to feed if you're Baker Mayfield? Like having, you know, a personality like Odell Beckham Jr. that you feel like you have to consistently try to get the football to?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really fair point. And I think as you become more established as a starter and you're a veteran, you know, no one's going to worry about if Tom Brady pisses off O.J. Howard, for example, because he's Tom Brady or Drew Brees. But in your formative years, I certainly have seen that where, you know, quarterback's trying to please everybody, and now all of a sudden, you know, your offense isn't functioning the way, you know, the offensive coordinator. So I think that's a fair point. I think to the extent they could just bring down the noise in Cleveland, go run a professional offense, I think everything else will take care of itself.
Mike T, I know everybody's worried about what's going on with the pandemic and trying to figure out, you know, what players will have to deal with as they come back for training camp. But, I mean, I thought it was interesting something that Eli Manning said yesterday on Sirius XM radio about Daniel Jones. He said that he thought it would be easier for him coming into this season than it was for him last season in terms of the dynamics within the organization and dealing with the reality of supplanting a legend like Eli. Have you ever seen a situation like that in the NFL? And can you speak to, you know, a young quarterback, you know, having the ability to step out of the shadow of a star like Eli?
Absolutely. We had it firsthand, Chris, with the Jets. We had Brett Favre, and we just had hired Rex Ryan. And our goal, and certainly my goal as a general manager, was I wanted two things. I wanted to get our new head coach in Rex Ryan and get a young quarterback to pair him with, who turned out to be Mark Sanchez. And of course, you're thinking back in mind, well, you know, do you have the vet and then bring along, you know, the young guy? But clearly, anytime a guy like Brett Favre is in the building, you know, he's going to take all the oxygen. So I understand that. And, you know, look, the Giants are going to sink and swim with, you know, Barkley and Daniel Jones. Like, that's the foundation for the next 10 years. So to the extent that you can make it his team where he can organize, you know, taking the offensive line out for dinner and all the little things that go so far in team building and chemistry, I think that's a fair point by Eli. I think that shows some – and again, I think some Eli was one of those guys. He didn't always get the credit for being as calculating, as intelligent as, you know, he is. And that's just a great observation by him.
Mike Tannenbaum with us, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, some breaking news that I want you to react off of. And Rick, listen up, please, okay? Pay close attention to this.
I got you.
Okay. Gore, 36, he'll be 37 next week, has signed a one-year deal with the New York Jets as the backup / co-starting running back with Le'Veon Bell. So, Mike, too old, still productive? What's your take on the Jets signing Gore?
Yeah, a little reunited with Coach Gase. You know, we had him in Miami, and Frank Gore has greatness to him. He has attributes you can't see, and he is as tough as they come. He has knees that medically you should never have had the career that he did, but you look at longevity and production, he's a rare guy. I mean, he's tougher than tough, and he will certainly be a force multiplier for that locker room. And another stop for him in the AFC East. He'll just have to get to New England next year to get all four. But any organization is better with Frank Gore as part of it.
Mike T, let me ask you. I got two more questions, so I'll ask this first one and then I'll wait. Now, so we're going to have the NFL schedule release on Thursday. Now, you've been a part of these meetings and everything else, going through the schedules. Just, I mean, with the current situation with the pandemic and everything else, not having enough answers, do you feel like the NFL would start their season if they didn't have the ability to have fans in seats? Or do you think they'll try to push this thing back maybe and start closer to October?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, we talked about that a little bit on Get Up Today. You know, Mike Greenberg was making the point that, you know, we're watching these highlights from South Korea, and they have cardboard cutouts of fans. And the players were saying that they were playing music. And I think that's going to be a really interesting part of the discussion. I think what the reality is, and I don't think the NFL would publicly admit it, but where they're really sitting in the catbird seat is they're going to get to watch Major League Baseball. They're going to get to watch the NBA, the NHL deal with it and see all the learnings that go along with, you know, do you have social distancing where you have maybe every other section, or do you have no fans, or are players playing with masks? Like, all the little things that we don't know today that we need to know by Labor Day for pro football, we'll know so much more. So I think the league is going to be there, be very, very patient, and then, you know, act accordingly and calculate it. So I think for them, they're benefiting from the calendar and how this is all happening. I mean, if you think about it, as tragic as this has been and the lives that it's cost, from the NFL perspective, if it was going to happen, the timing really was ideal. You have this incredible Super Bowl that, with 6 minutes left, you don't know who's going to be the champion. And then, unfortunately, the pandemic happened. But it happened, you know, again, from a league perspective, it gives them the benefit of time to react accordingly.
Mike T, I know the last couple of weeks everybody has been focused on the draft, you know, what teams are going to do, and then the fallout afterward. But NFL teams have also had to decide on the fifth-year options for the players taken in the first round in the 2017 draft class. Are there any surprises in terms of options that were exercised or options that were declined?
Well, I'll tell you this. I really admire what Ryan Pace and the Bears did. They didn't exercise the option on Trubisky, who was a player that 3 years ago they traded up for it. Obviously, hindsight's 2020, but you have Deshaun Watson and obviously, you know, Patrick Mahomes that they could have just taken at three. So by not exercising the option, I think what they're saying is, okay, we made a mistake and we're going to admit it. Now, one other nuance that's really important that we should talk about that most people don't realize is this. It's not the end of the story. There are a couple of examples, not a lot, but ironically it was Corey Fuller with the Chicago Bears. It was Mark Ingram with the Saints, where sometimes options are not exercised, meaning the player will be a free agent, and then subsequently the incumbent team, the team that drafted that player, re-signs with that team. So although it looks like Foles is the future in Chicago, it's not necessarily over for Trubisky.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. It looks like, unless it's Cam Newton, which it doesn't appear will happen, that the Patriots are going to go with Stidham as their as their starting quarterback or battle with Hoyer at a very at the minimum. Does it surprise you that we're here, that Belichick's going to go with a guy that's completely unproven and a guy that's, you know, seemingly just a very average backup quarterback in this league to battle for the spot?
You know, Dave, yes, and, you know, a little, I think we missed some cues along the way, myself included, which was, if we go back to Labor Day last year, they cut Brian Hoyer. So here they are, they're going to make this run with Tom Brady, and they knew it was reasonable that it was going to be Braze last year. And their backup was a fourth-round rookie in Jarrett Stidham. They had nobody else. So, you know, I think we all, myself included, missed the tea leaves in saying, like, Coach Belichick really believes in Stidham. So I was surprised they didn't take a run at Dalton. I thought he was perfect for New England. So I am surprised, but, you know, I think at some point we got to, you know, trust what they're saying, which is they believe in Jarrett Stidham.
All right, Mike T, potentially my last question. So I saw you, I actually have a Google, I have a Google alert on my phone. Whenever you do anything, it alerts me. So I'd get up on this morning so I could watch you. And you guys were going back and forth as far as, you know, Joe Burrow and you know, Trevor Lawrence here moving forward. And they never really got to ask you, when I was hoping they would. If Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow were available to be drafted this year and you had the first overall pick, who would you take?
Yeah, that was easy for me, and I disagree with Mel. I'm taking Trevor Lawrence because greatness is defined by consistently at a high level, and taking nothing away from Joe Burrow because I think he's going to be really good. But Trevor Lawrence started, was the best high school player from day one. He's not even – guys, this is remarkable. He's going to be 21 in October. He has 26 starts at Clemson. He's only going to get better, but he is John Elway. He is Vinny Testaverde. Joe Burrow had a transfer from Ohio State, and let's be candid, a year ago, none of us knew who Joe Burrow was. He was going to be a middle-of-the-pack pick. So Joe Burrow deserves a ton of credit, but Trevor Lawrence, when he walks in the room, he looks like an NFL great quarterback. And, oh, by the way, the other interesting part of that discussion is Justin Fields, like, to me, I still can't believe that Jacob Fromm at the University of Georgia beat out Justin Fields, because when you see Fields, and I've seen him up close, guys, he looks like Cam Newton. I mean, we may be looking at two truly transformative quarterbacks. Look at what Fields did. He threw 41 touchdowns in his first year at starting in the Big Ten.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Mr. T, last question for me. I need you to break out your crystal ball. Who gets paid first, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, or Pat Mahomes?
Well, I would say it should be Prescott, guys, and here's why, Chris. He's not under contract. Those two are. So I would just say, like, they've been going at it the longest, and my gosh, like, get the deal done. Like, you fell into him. You wanted Paxton Lynch. You tried all these other cornerback sort of ideas, and none of them worked. He's in your building. He's high character. He's productive. Just go make Dak Prescott. He's going to be the highest paid quarterback literally for 10 minutes because Mahomes and Watson will race right by him. So I really don't know what the holdup is. You know, they signed good players like DeMarcus Lawrence and Lyle Collins and Jalen Smith. You really like to have those players. But without this quarterback, they have no chance to compete for a championship. And with him, they certainly do.
And I was going to be done. And then in the spirit of Rick DiPietro, another one just popped into my head. If let's just, for argument's sake, Dak Prescott doesn't even play this year. What could the Cowboys be with Andy Dalton, the quarterback?
I think a middle of the road, possibly a back of the end wildcard team. You know, it was funny. Dominic Foxer went on this rant about there's nothing that Andy Dalton's better at than Dak Prescott, including looks. Like, he went on and on and on, but Andy Dalton is he's a decent player, but he's not going to turn into what Ryan Tannehill did with Tennessee. Like, he doesn't have that skill level. He doesn't have that athleticism. He doesn't have sort of that, you know, burst and explosiveness to his game. He is a smart, competent NFL quarterback that would make Dallas a 8-8, maybe a 9-7 team.
Rick?
All right, I have one more. You pushed me into it. Mike T, now, getting back to that Dak Prescott point, we all realize that they should have paid him before, you know, the start of last season. I mean, they made the mistake there. But if you're Dak, we keep asking the questions as far as, you know, what Dallas is thinking. If you're Dak Prescott at this point, and they've handled it the way that they've handled it, and, you know, part of the reporting has been the years, they want a longer-term deal and he wants a shorter-term deal. If you're Dak Prescott at this point, wouldn't you just bet on yourself and just sign the franchise tag and then put the pressure on him again after this season?
100%. I mean, when you start looking at the math of what that quickly would turn into, that's exactly what happened with Kirk Cousins. He bet on himself, and he wound up getting that $88 million guaranteed contract from Minnesota. And Cousins isn't even great. I mean, imagine if Prescott signs the franchise tag and he goes out there next year. Like, what would the Jacksonville Jaguars pay Dak Prescott to walk into that building? So it would be a blank check. So if I'm Dak Prescott and he has a good agent in Todd France, I promise you, those are the discussions they're having. Like, they bet on themselves. He is now, he has extreme leverage, and I would not rule that out.
I can't believe the Cowboys have done this. They've made such a mess of the situation.
Yeah, and they fell into a great one because, again, they tried to unsuccessfully trade up for Paxton Lynch and pursue a couple other quarterbacks. So it was right there in their lap. Young, productive, high character. Like, I don't – someone has to explain to me why they didn't do that, especially when Zeke Elliott's sitting there with 2 years left on his deal and all the other moves they made. Like, every day that goes by, it's another day for Dak Prescott.
Mike T, there was a report that surfaced yesterday that said Cam Newton is not interested in being a backup. Now, I know we can't forecast injuries, but do you see a scenario where Cam Newton could be a starting quarterback week one in the National Football League other than somebody going down with an injury?
Well, like, to me, the obvious spots, Chris, if it would happen, you know, Jacksonville certainly comes to the top of mind. You know, if you had to rank the 32 starters right now, you know, you certainly could put, you know, Minshew at the bottom two or three. You know, beyond that, I think most of these guys are going to be solidified. Denver's going to ride with Drew Lock. You know, that's pretty apparent. You know, Chicago fortified, Trubisky with Foles. So I think beyond Jacksonville, it's hard to see a situation where, you know, Cam's going to be handed, you know, a starting job.
Mike, we appreciate it. We will breaking news during the segment as well with the Frank Gore news. We appreciate it. We will talk to you next week. Be safe, be healthy, and have a good week, bud.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Of course, that is Mike Tenenbaum, who always joins us every Tuesday here on 98.7 ESPN. So some news during it. Rick, you have a new running back. And my first thought is, you know, Gase loves him. Gase said last week that he wants to start to, you know, lessen the load on one Le'Veon Bell, where a lot of people wanted more runs for Le'Veon Bell and catches for Le'Veon Bell last week. How much are you going to see from Frank Gore? I'm thinking you're going to see a lot of Frank Gore this coming season.
Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense to me, though, lessen the load on Le'Veon Bell. I mean, you had the perfect opportunity to use the hell out of Le'Veon Bell, and you didn't do it.
No. I don't think he likes Le'Veon Bell.
But I mean, do you have to, you can probably eliminate the think part of that. Any reason to believe that he does like him?
No. Frank Gore is going to be your running back.
He's what, 37 years old?
He'll be 37 next week, yes.
I mean, oh, listen.
Unheard of.
I mean.
Ran for 600 yards last year, though.
Yeah, but you're already paying. Okay, listen. And if he's coming in to be a force multiplier and he's going to, you know, he's going to be an extension of Adam Gase, then I understand it. But, I mean, you're paying Le'Veon Bell a ton of money. You didn't use him the right way. You didn't use him enough last year. I mean, why don't we focus on trying to get the best out of him?
Well, I don't disagree with you, but he's here and he's gonna get his carries. All right, today on ESPN Daily, Korean baseball started today, one of the only leagues playing anywhere. If you watch the games on ESPN, you might see a player do a bat flip when you least expect it. Hear why bat flips are big in Korea. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. The third most yards in the history of the NFL at running back has just joined your New York Jets. Frank Gore will be 37 years old next week. Rick, the running back situation with the Jets looks, by name at least, looks very good. Lev Bell,
yeah, by
Frank
name,
Gore.
Yeah, but at 37, I mean, can you call? Isn't it more like a, you know, a jogging back or like a briskly walking back?
Well, you don't think
37?
Don't be disrespectful to Frankie G. Don't do it.
I love Frank Gore. But again, I mean, we're sitting here talking about a guy who's 37 years old. I mean, in Chris, I was just reading one of Chris's text messages. I mean, the biggest impact he'll have, hopefully, is on the locker room.
Well,
bring some, you know,
that.
Some leadership and stability. But don't try to sell me that you're trying to unlock Lev Bell by reducing his touches. Stop.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, the best way to unlock Lev Bell is get some people in front of him that can actually block. And so the overhaul that Joe Douglas has done during the offseason on the offensive line, you're hoping that gives you early returns in 2020.
You're too old!
You know it's going to take some time for them to gel, though. I mean, offensive line is one of those position groups where they all have to work together, and you have to have that chemistry, you have to have that rapport, and not having OTAs, not having mini camp, and who knows what kind of training camp we're going to have, that could be one of the things that makes the Jets offense struggle early this season.
They can't afford that. The Jets cannot afford the offense to struggle early this season. They need to have a good year. They need to compete for a playoff spot. They need to run the football. They need to make it easier on Sam Darnold. They can't afford to come out of the gates and start out another, 1-4, 1-5, 2-6. You can't afford that this season.
No, you can't afford it. I mean, you're talking about, a running game last year when you had the perfect opportunity with your starting quarterback out. You had, between, what you saw from Simeon before he got snapped in half, and then you had, Fails, which was a train wreck. Go back to the Cincinnati Bengals game last year, the game that they lost to an 0-11 team. Lev Bell rushed the ball 10 times. He had 10 attempts against the worst rush defense in the National Football League.
How many times, Chris, did we turn our mics on a Monday morning and say, why did Lev Bell have 14 touches? Why did Lev Bell not get 8 carries until the second half? That seemed like it was a theme every single week.
Yeah, Dave, I think he only had 3 or 4 games where he was north of 20 touches. So, it kind of baffles you, but when you go back and actually look at it, he did have a lot of touches as far as running backs go. He had 311 touches, which put him 7th in terms of running backs. So it's not like they weren't getting the ball, but it just felt like they were getting him the ball in ineffective ways and in situations where he couldn't do what he does best. And so the question is Adam Gase willing to adapt his system in order to fit the skill sets of the players around him? And Dave, that's one of the things that we just don't have an answer to. We really didn't see him do it down there in Miami, and it feels like he's been resistant to doing it in his tenure with the Jets. So you're just wondering, is this a head coach that's hell-bent on making the X's and O's go his way rather than adapting his offense to what talent level he has on this team? That's the one thing that I'm still waiting to see from Adam Gase, putting his players routinely in positions for them to do what they do best.
All right, let's go to some of the calls. People want to talk about Frank Gore to the Jets, 800-919-3776. Ira, Staten Island. Ira, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, Dave, Rick, Chris. How are you guys? Glad everybody's healthy. I would have been a lot – I know you had Mike T on, and I would have been – he's 100% right. I would have loved to hear that they signed either Matt Moore or Joe Flacco today. That would have, been a little better. But listen, Frank or Rick, I think you're looking at this the wrong way. I'm a big Bilal Powell fan, one of the biggest, and I would have loved for them to bring him back. I think this pretty much, seals the deal. He'll be playing somewhere else next year. But and Chris hit it on the head. 311 touches. He got his work. It's how they use him. Whether Gase is going to, put that system in place to use Bell's strengths or not. But don't kid yourself. Gore is going to get touches. I'm telling you right now, if they play 16 games this year, almost guarantee you Bell will not have 300 touches. They are definitely in the mindset of reducing his role and not his role, but the workload. And I think they feel that they could benefit and get more out of him if he has, 250 touches.
Yeah, but Ira, time off on 1 second. So it's Frank Gore. I get it. And he's been great. I'm not going to take that away from Frank Gore. But listen to what you're saying, trying to rationalize in your mind what you're saying. We're going to try to limit the amount of touches for our 28-year-old running back to give those touches to our brand new shiny 37-year-old running back.
No, maybe I'm not explaining myself right. 250 touches, if you use right the way Chris is explaining it, okay, you could get more quality production out of him if you put him in the right situation and save his legs, and then Gore could easily make up the difference. There's no problem. Use Bell in the right situation.
I don't think the lack of productivity was because he had too many touches and he didn't have the legs.
I do. I think he lost a step, to be quite honest with you. I do. I don't think Bell has the same burst that he had in Pittsburgh. And I saw it in practice, and you definitely saw it in the game.
But the 37-year-old running back is going to give you that extra with those touches going to the 37-year-old running back. It's going to have he's going to have the burst that you didn't see from Lev Bell?
No, of course not. But clearly, Gase has more confidence in Gore playing a backup role to Bell than Powell. You know, evidently Gase is more comfortable with Gore. And let's not forget, you know, they drafted Perrine. You know, he's going to be part of the equation too. But I'm saying Bell will, you know, if I hope Chris is right, you know, I hope Gase is going to use Bell in a different way. He'll get approximately 250 touches, and I think Perrine and Gore will split up the rest. That's how I feel. Maybe you'll see Bell split out wide more, which he should be, because he's probably the best receiver on the team right now.
Well, see, Ira, you brought up something that's probably key to all of this, too, the kind of weapons that the Jets have on the outside. Because last year, a lot of the time, Le'Veon Bell was running against stacked boxes, 8 and 9 man fronts. I mean, at some point, you have to have some threats on the outside to be able to create some favorable looks so Le'Veon Bell has some room to operate in the run game. I mean, I think this is more about Adam Gase being able to threaten all three levels of the defense rather than about Le'Veon Bell losing a step or being able to bring in another workhorse running back to shoulder the load. I don't think it comes down to that. To me, the success of the Jets season and Le'Veon Bell having a bounce back year comes down to Sam Darnold being able to take that next step as a passer and as somebody that can help move this offense forward. To me, that's the key that's going to unlock the Jets offense. Until they figure that part of it, they're still going to be in the cellar in terms of offenses in the National Football League.
All right, no, thanks for the call, Ira. Ira, we got to run. We appreciate the phone call, 800-919-3776. Now, you guys can say, or Ira can say, yo, you're going to see dynamic things with Lev Bell, and he's your best receiver. I don't believe that anymore. Like, I went into year one with Lev Bell thinking, you know what? Gase is a smart offensive guy. Bell's a dynamic weapon. I'm really interested to see how he's going to use him. It couldn't have been worse. It couldn't have been more vanilla. It couldn't have been more bland. I don't think that you're going to see the Band-Aid ripped off and all of a sudden year two, Rick, Lev Bell is going to be some dynamic guy that lines up out wide and is a deep threat or is going to be a threat in the passing game. I'm not saying it can't be, but I'm not going to believe that till I see it with the Jets this year.
It's what he should be. I mean, Chris, you can tell me if I'm wrong. When I watched Lev Bell play, especially, you know, when Lev Bell was with Pittsburgh, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, was catching, you know, 94 passes a season. I mean, 85 passes a season was being targeted over 100 times. He doesn't feel like to me, the type of running back that would necessarily benefit from less touches. He feels like the kind of running back that needs more touches.
I would agree with that, but I guess the biggest thing is the commitment that the Jets have to a running game that fits his style of play. I mean, I can't believe that Le'Veon Bell's lack of productivity last year and having a career low 3.2 yards a carry is all on him in terms of the decline in the skill set. I mean, it's got to be in part Adam Gase not putting him in situations that lead to bringing out the best in his ability. Like, I think that there's something to be said about the coach putting his players in position to win. And that's not something that Adam Gase has been known to do as a head coach. Now, we saw him have success with Peyton Manning out in Denver and a little bit of success in Chicago with Jay Cutler. But, I mean, as far as him being the head coach and being the one to buy the groceries and then develop the schemes that the players are going to have to execute, I haven't seen Adam Gase make the game easier for his players. And that should be his number one job every single week, because the reason that he got the gig to be the head coach of the Jets is because they want to get the best out of Sam Darnold.
All right. Let's take a quick break. 800-919-3776. Let me tell you about this, though. This is very exciting. UFC makes its return on May 9th, which is this Saturday. Going to feature a double main event live on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. First, see number one ranked lightweight contender Tony Ferguson square off against number four Justin Gaethje. Then a bantamweight bout between Henry Cejudo and Dominic Cruz. UFC 249 finally here, and 98.7 ESPN getting you ready with the Sweat at Home contest. This is your chance to score a 98.7 UFC prize pack. We're asking our listeners to send us an innovative in-home workout video. We'll judge on creativity and clarity. Make sure to keep your submission to under 30 seconds. Tweet us your video with our show handle, at DCR on ESPN, and use the hashtag 987Sweat at home. To see the official rules, go to ESPNNewYork.com. Here at DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, we're getting you ready for UFC 249, Saturday, May 9th on ESPN Plus Paper. In these trying times, important to remember, we'll pull together as a community. We always do. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send us an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com and let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. 800-919-3776. Our community, we're kind of differing views on the signing of Frank. I don't think this is awful. It's just you're signing an older running back, I think partly because he's durable and capable and partly because he's going to be a good locker room guy, Chris.
Yeah, I think that'll be his biggest contributions to the Jets in 2020. It'll be him being an extension of the coaching staff, Adam Gase, Joe Douglas, like trying to establish the culture. Because right now, I mean, the Jets really don't have a lot of leadership in that locker room. I mean, you want Jamal Adams to be a leader, but you're talking about a player that's at odds with the organization because he wants a commitment either in the way of the contract extension or for them to be able to move on from him and trade him to a place where he can get his money. So, I mean, it's going to be hard for Jamal to be in lockstep with Adam Gase and Joe Douglas, but somebody like Frank Gore that's at the end of his career that just wants to be a part of it and wants to have, you know, the younger players on this team be a part of, you know, his ultimate legacy with the NFL, I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't think Frank Gore is going to come in and make any waves in the organization. Frank Gore is only going to come in and be a positive influence with the younger players that are starving for leadership in that locker room.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's going to be more on the offensive line than it is whatever running back it ends up being. I mean, you're talking about a Jets team last year that had the second worst rushing offense in the National Football League, just ahead of the Miami Dolphins. I mean, 79 yards a game. So
that is unbelievable.
Well, do I like Frank Gore? Yeah, I like Frank Gore. But, I mean, it's not a move that's going to necessarily excite me. I mean, is he going to bring leadership to the locker room? Yeah, he is. I mean, hopefully it works out better than Jonathan Stewart did with the Giants.
Oh, it absolutely will. Yeah, that's night and day. That's night and day. When you talk about the players and leadership qualities and tangibles, that's not even close.
Can't be worse, that's for sure. That was one of a horrendous signing. All right, let's go back to the club. Really? One of the worst signings. Was he healthy for like a couple of games? How many carries did he have, Rick? Do you have any remembrance of that?
Jonathan Stewart, that's a great question.
He didn't have 10 carries, right?
I don't know if he even had 10 carries, to be honest,
right,
Dave.
Yeah, I don't think he had 10 carries.
Yeah, that's right up there with the Leonard Williams trade.
No, the Williams trade is worse.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
and you mortgage nothing. You signed Stewart for a couple $1 million. It's not that big a deal. Leonard Williams, he gave a third.
Jonathan Stewart had six carries.
Six carries for how many? Wow. 12 yards? 10
six
yards?
Carries, 17 yards.
17, so he exploded on a couple of those runs. Yeah.
Yeah. Frank Gore signing won't be that.
No, it'll be better.
It won't be that.
Exploded.
He hit 17 yards.
That's close
along
to the
five,
average.
Dave. It was along a five.
Along, I mean, yeah, look at that. He had a long of 5 yards, Rick. That was probably the third 26. They did an inside handoff.
Here's the thing, though, Dave. This is for a Jets fan right now. Between listening to, you know, Chris Carlin say that, you know, Sam Darnold is on the clock and everything else. Like,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, but this is not a time as a Jets fan to be joking around. Like, this is a make or break season.
Yeah.
For this head coach and this young quarterback.
More for the head coach, but yes, this is a huge season for the team. Huge season. Dan and Merrick. Dan, you're on 98.7.
Hey, guys. I just first want to say, you know, big fan of your show. I'm painting my house right now, so I'm listening every day. And Rick, I'm a huge Islander fan. It's like all the love for what you did the organization. And I completely agree with you guys. You know, on one hand, Frank Gore, he's an older guy, brings leadership, all that. But if you're taking carries away from Lev Bell, I mean, if you want to argue with me whether or not I should pay running backs in this league, I'll listen. But he's on the roster. You know, to not use him, it just shows how stubborn Gase is and unwillingness to use an elite weapon that can help Sam Darnold. I just don't understand it.
Well, you spent the draft pick on a running back, right? I mean, so you did that. You could have made the argument last year when you watched him run that, you know, Bilal Powell maybe was a little bit more explosive than what you saw from Lev Bell. But, I mean, I can't imagine that bringing in, I know his name is Frank Gore, but bringing in a 37-year-old running back is going to make that huge of a difference. what you for on the field. I'm not talking about what in the locker room. He's going to help in the locker room, but as far as what happens on the field, I can't imagine he's going to make a huge impact.
No, I can't imagine that either. But I mean, it feels like, you know, Frank Gore is going to be a guy that they might lean on for 100 to 150 touches, and beyond that, whatever contribution that he's going to bring, it's going to be in the way of intangibles. I don't see Frank Gore being the guy that actually moves the needle in terms of productivity on the field. With his offense getting back on track, I just don't see that. So I'm with you on that one. But that's not what this signing is all about.
So this is about the locker room, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah,
it has to be. I'm asking you guys a serious question. Who's the leader in that Jets locker room?
Probably your safety.
And is he in a place where he feels good about the head coach and the GM?
No, probably not.
Okay, so don't you have to do something if you're a GM, if you're a head coach, in terms of being able to bring in some veteran leadership? Because right now with the Jets, it's the blind leading the blind. How are you going to figure your way out? How are you going to figure out a way past adversity when you don't have anybody that's actually been in the league long enough to go through that and get to the other side of it? Think about what the San Francisco 49ers were when Frank Gore came to them in 2005. They were terrible, Dave. They had the number one overall pick. It was a terrible organization, but in about a half a decade, it became a team that went to three straight NFC championship games. This is a guy that understands the process of being in an upstart organization and then actually getting to the point where you're consistently competitive. That's a part of the value that Frank Gore can bring to the Jets.
You know what's amazing here? I'm sitting here looking at the rushing offenses from last season and the amount of attempts. So the Jets had 383 attempts. The least amount of attempts was the Dolphins. They had 349. You know what's crazy? Especially because, I mean, when you look at the averages per carry and the fact that you have, I mean, one of the best running backs in the National Football League. You know the Giants had the third least amount of carries last season?
The third attempts?
Attempts, yeah, the third least amount of attempts.
Which was what?
They had 362 attempts. Just ahead of the Redskins and the Dolphins.
And what's a lot of attempts? Like, what's the top 10 team at?
Baltimore Ravens had 596 attempts. Niners had 498. Seahawks 481. Vikings 476. Colts 471.
Yeah, big difference. So go through. Let's just see of the top teams in rushing attempts. How many of them are good football teams?
Well, yeah, the Ravens, the Niners, the Seahawks, the Vikings.
Great.
I mean, Colts have been good. Jacoby Brissett doesn't get hurt. Maybe that's a different story. Bills, they're a playoff team.
Yep.
Eagles, playoff team. Cowboys just missed the playoffs. Patriots, Titans.
Yep.
Then you got the Raiders.
So of the top 10 teams in rushing attempts, 8 of them, it sounds like, were playoff teams?
Yeah, so you have Baltimore, San Francisco, Seattle, Minnesota. They won a game. Buffalo, Philly, New England, Tennessee, yeah. So eight of the.
It's a pretty good recipe for winning football.
Exactly.
Eight of the top 11. Yeah, 8 of the top 11 made the playoffs.
All right.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.